Okay. Why do you get along? What do you say? Okay. I thought he said something. So, I'm going to read a little bit from the opening of You're the Monkey, and we spoke about dreams, and so this will give a little sense. I have, these are my new glasses. Yeah, I have all my, I've got all, you know, I've got my new glasses. Oh, and I would like to thank Sir Paul Smith for my nice jacket. You know, we have the same initials, Paul Smith and I, and I get socks there with PS on them. I have to get them out. It was well past midnight when we pulled up in front of the Dream Motel. I paid the driver, made sure I left nothing behind, and rang the bell to wake up the proprietor. It's almost 3 a.m., she said, but she gave me my key and a bottle of mineral water. My room was on the lowest floor, facing the long pier. I opened the sliding glass door and could hear the sound of the waves, accompanied by the faint barking of sea lions sprawled out on the plants beneath the wharf. Happy New Year, I called out. Happy New Year to the waxing moon, the telepathic sea. The drive from San Francisco was just over an hour. I had been wide awake but suddenly felt weak. I took off my coat and left the sliding door slightly open to listen to the waves, but immediately fell into a facsimile of sleep. I woke abruptly, went to the john, brushed my teeth, removed my boots, and went to bed. Maybe I dreamed. For the next few days, it was like that, waking, dreaming, and somewhere in between. I would sit on the patio, wrapped in a blanket like a convalescent in a magic mountain. I would turn on the radio, and a song would come on, like Nina Simone saying, I put a spell on you. The seals were silent, and I could hear the waves of the distance. Winter on the west coast, I sank into bed and slept heavily. In the Dream Motel, I was certain I did not dream, yet the more I thought about it, I realized I did dream. More precisely, I skated along the fringe of dreaming. Dusk masquerading as night, and masking as dawn, and illumining the path I willingly followed from the desert to the sea. Gulls were wailing and calling as the seals slept, save their king, one of the walrus, who lifted his head and bellowed at the sun. There was a sense everyone gone, a J.G. Ballard kind of gone.
Yeah, I was free.
My grown children at their grandfather Dewey's funeral came to mind. my son in a black Stetson hat, and my daughter in a black dress. Sam looks up and grins when I re-enter. We immediately return to work, an early revision of a recent manuscript. There are several changes and new passages, which he verbalizes to avoid the struggle of writing by hand. Some time ago, he told me that one must write in absolute solitude, but necessity has shifted his process. Sam adjusts and seems invigorated by the prospect of focusing on something new. His sister Roxanne makes me tea. Her coffee, she says. Sam smiles. She's had that darn cough for 45 years. Sam sits stoically in his wheelchair, his hands resting on the table. His old Gibson rests in a corner, a guitar he can no longer play. And the reality of the present hits hard. No banging on the typewriter keys, no broken cattle, no more struggling with his cowboy boots. Still I say nothing of these things, and neither does Sam. He fills the silences with the written word, seeking a perfection he alone can dictate. We continue, me reading and transcribing, Sam writing out loud in real time. The deeper task is to rescue aloneness, the aloneness required to write, the absolute necessity to claim these hours as though hurled through space, like the astronaut in 2001, never dying, just continuing on and on. We've become a Beckett play, Sam says good-naturedly. I imagine us rooted in our place at the kitchen table, each of us dwelling in a barrel with a tin lid. We wake up and poke out our heads and sit before our coffee and peanut butter toast, waiting until the sun rises, plotting as if we're alone. Not alone together, but each alone, not disturbing the aura of the other's aloneness. Yep, a Beckett play, he repeats. As night falls, his sister prepares his needs. I settle into my makeshift bed, situated where I can see him. Are you all right, he says. Yeah, I'm good, I answer. Good night, Bagley. Good night, Sam. I lie there listening to the sound of his breathing. There are no curtains, and I can see the silhouettes of the trees. Moonlight illuminates the fragile webs in the corners of the room and the edge of his bed and the low coffee table between us, laden with books and my feet poking out of the quilt that covers me. The portrait of night I see through the window beckons. Unable to sleep, I get up and go outside to breathe the air, looking up at the stars and listening to the crickets and the bullfrogs in full throttle. I use the flashlight of my phone and return to the garden of the house. The black butterflies are still there, motionless, covering a portion of the ledge of the garden wall. But I can't really tell if they are dead or just sleeping.
Thank you.
when cities were merely hills. He shifted his gaze from me to over his shoulder, then down to his shoes, then finally looked up and answered in a low voice, "She's got the beat." I merely smiled and shrugged. I didn't doubt him, but I didn't put too much stock in it either, until several days later, back in New York City, unable to sleep, I was scrolling the channels and stopped at some music infomercial. I think it was one of those deals where they sell 22 CDs from the 80s, or maybe it was just girl groups, but there on the TV were the Go-Go's doing "He Got the Beat" on some English pop music show. All the girls were cool, but it was Belinda who had the moves. Nothing flashy, sort of like beach blanket bingo with a modern swing and a kind of French parodies with leggings and little high heels. "Yeah, Belinda," I said aloud, "you got the beat." Her exuberance was infectious. I imagined a non-violent hubris spreading across the land, like the boys of West Side Story, boy fighting matting swagger was singing, "When You're a Jet." Hundreds of thousands of girls and boys flooding the open perimeters, taking on Belinda Carlisle's moves, singing, "We Got the Beat." And soldiers laying down their arms, and sailors leaving their posts, and thieves the scene of their crimes, and all at once running at the center of one grand musical. No power, no race, no religion, no apologies. And with this vast spectacle racing through my head, some part of me leapt up and sashayed down the road, entering the scene, joining the chorus, increasing ad infinitum, like William Blake's angels streaming from the turning pages of the Book of Life.
Thank you.
Dreamed of a long train of migrants walking from one end of the earth to another, far beyond the ruins of what had once been home. They walked through deserts and barren plains and strangling wetlands where wide ribbons of inedible algae, brighter than the Persian sky, wrapped around their ankles. They walked dragging their banners behind, clothed in the fabric of lamentations, seeking the extended hand of humankind, shelter where none was offered. They walked where wealth was shuttered within works of architectural mastery, immense boulders encasing modern huts, ingenuously obscured by dense indigenous vegetation. The air within was dry, yet all doors, windows, and wells were hermetically sealed, as if in anticipation of their coming, all doors were closed. And I dreamed that all our hardships were viewed on global screens, personal tablets, and two-way wristwatches, becoming a popular form of reality-based entertainment. All watched us passionately as they tread unforgiving ground, hope leading into hopelessness. Yet all sighed with emotion as art flourished. Musicians rose from their torpor, composing mesmerizing works of symphonic suffering. Sculptures sprang as if from the covered ground. Muscular dancers depicted the torments of the exiled, rushing the length of great stages as if overcome by nomadic futility. All watched riveted, even as the world in its dependable folly kept spinning. And I dreamed the monkey leapt upon it, this mirror ball of confusion, and broke into dancing. And in my dream, it was pouring, as if with a heartbroken vengeance. Yet unconscious of the weather, I went out without a raincoat, walking all the way to Times Square. People were gathered before a mammoth screen, watching the inauguration. And a young lad, the very same, who had alerted the populace that the emperor had no clothes, cried, "Look, he's back again. You let him out of the bag." The festivities were followed by a new installment of a reenactment of the trials of the migrants. Wooden boats streaked in gold lay abandoned in the shallow waters. A gilded mascot descended to screeching and flapping its monstrous wings. Dancers writhed in agony as barbs of compassion pricked their feet. The onlookers wrung their hands in sympathetic fury, yet this was nothing to those walking near, the circumference killers, tracing words in the wind-swept sand. Portray us if you must, but we are the living thorns, the pierced and the piercing. And I awoke and what was done, the human chain was in motion, and their voices played in the air like a cloud of ravaging insects. One cannot approximate the truth, add or take away, for there is no one on earth like the true shepherd, and there is nothing in heaven like the suffering of real life.
Colors flying all around, it shows in words, all in our dreams.
November 4th, first of all, Happy Souls Day, All Souls Day. Don't have to applaud. November 4th is a very special day. It's the birthday of Robert Mapplethorpe. It's the birthday of my grandson. And it's also the passing day of my husband, Fred Son Smith. And on this November 4th, it will be the 25th anniversary of his passing. So I would like to do a little song that was written for Fred. And I always think of him when we do.
Here as I am, hold me close, darling, on the
actually, I was right in the middle of the Midsummer Murder. The year of the monkey, the death of the last white rhinoceros, the ravaging of Puerto Rico, the massacre of school children, the disparaging words and actions against our migrants, the orphan Gaza Strip, and what of existence? What of existence only a reach away? And the stoic writer who held a miniature of the world in the palm of his tattooed hand. What will happen to him, I had asked myself, shuttling back and forth to Kentucky. When I first wrote these words, I didn't know yet. And one could fast forward or move backwards. The time has a way of still going, ticking away. New things one cannot alter, cannot get down fast enough. We used to laugh, me and Sam, about this disconnect. You write in time, and then time is gone. And in trying to catch up, you write in a whole other book, like Jackson Pollock losing contact with a painting and making a whole other painting and losing the thread of both and in a rage kicking through glass walls. I can tell you this, that the last time I saw Sam, his manuscript was all but done. It was there on the kitchen table like a small monolith, containing the containable, containing the uncontainable, a bright flicker that could not be distinguished, could not be extinguished. It was his last work. Why birds, wrote Sam. Why birds, echoed his sister, their song wafted from a boombox partially buried in the sand. Why birds, cried an old man, and they flapped their wings and broke formation and eventually disappeared. This is what I know. Sam is dead. My brother is dead. My mother is dead. My father is dead. My husband is dead. My cat is dead. And my dog, who was dead in 1957, is still dead. Yet still, I keep thinking that something wonderful is about to happen. Despite all strife, maybe tomorrow, but tomorrow following a whole succession of tomorrows. Thank you. To let this linger.